that was where there was a major sugyah. The Shmicha school of Tefillah discussion. So moving on from that, after that you have Ashrei. And Ashrei, as you know, so the Gemara here says that if you say Ashrei three times a day, so Muftach lo Shri Ben Olam Haba. That's actually a question. Girsa's whether it's really one time a day or three times a day. Our Gemara has three times a day, but there are some Rishonim who have one time a day. It could be, so we do it three times B'tavrus Minig. Whatever it is, it boils down to we do it three times a day. There's some discussion, if you miss Mincha, you're davening two Ma'arivs, should you perhaps make up the Ashrei also in between the two Shmon Esreis? That relates to a different discussion, which we're not up to right now. When you're making up a Shmon Esrei, and you're davening two Shmon Esreis in a row, is there any inyan to have anything in between them, anything preparing the second Shmon Esrei? And here the question is also, is it worth making up the Ashrei, assuming that you really have an ideal of three Ashreis a day? In any case, much has been written, Alpi Hashkafa and Alpi Derech HaJrush, about what the significance of Poseach HaSedech or Mespi L'chol Chai Ratzon. The Gemara basically says that if you're going to say Ashrei three times a day, say Ben Olam Haba. And of course, the Meforshim discuss, does that mean you can kill people and rob banks and be treifus and just say Ashrei three times a day and everything is covered? So the answer is yes. No, the answer is probably no. The answer is probably that Ashrei is more like a vitamin or an aspirin, some say, that you say if you take this vitamin every day, so you live a long life. If you take a vitamin every day and you walk in front of a bus, so it's still not going to help so much. So too, Ashrei is in that sense that if you say it three times a day and you're doing other things properly, so then things are going to look good for you. In the Sefer Kahunas Rifal, the Sefer Shalos and Tshuvas, and in the back there's Ksav and his little Ha'aris on the Agata in Brachas. So he comments that first of all, this Ben Olam Haba idea, it doesn't mean that this is how you get Olam Haba. It means that you're a person who's a Ben Olam Haba, a person who is in position to get it if everything works out. And the reason that is that it means that if you say Ashrei with the proper kavanas, so then you are going to be primed to do what it takes for Olam Haba. Why? So he discusses his take on this whole Poseach HaSedecha thing, which is not so different than everybody else's take, so we'll take him as representational, that the Gemara highlights two milas. Right? The Gemara says that you go through the whole Aleph base structure in Ashrei, so that's a pretty hush of a zach. But then the Gemara says that we find that elsewhere in Tehillim as well. So then the Gemara says also Poseach HaSedecha must be L'chol Chai Ratzon, and the Gemara says we have other things that are similar to that. So the Gemara concludes that Ashrei is Choshev because Ashrei has both. So the Gehunas Rafal comments that basically the two themes here, and again he's not saying anything in this point so radically different than what other Mefarshim comment, that the idea of the Aleph base structure, so what's the great, okay, so you have Aleph base Gimel Dalet, so why is that so impressive? Why is that such a wonderful thing? So the Maila of the Aleph base is comprehensivity. That basically you're saying I use the whole alphabet to praise the Ribbono Shalom, so it indicates the range of everything that's out there. And it basically makes the point that the Kadosh Baruch Hu created everything that's out there, that everything is his creation. And Poseach HaSedecha Mesbi'a L'chol Chai Ratzon shows that he's concerned about every creature in the world. Mesbi'a L'chol Chai Ratzon. So the Gemara says that we choose Ashrei because it has both of them, so the Kunis Rafal explains, because one without the other is totally missing the point, or could be significantly missing the point. That on the one hand, if you just use the Aleph base structure, so then you could be saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the whole world, but who knows, maybe he doesn't really continue to care about it anymore. Maybe he has now abandoned it. And if you were to say that he's Poseach HaSedecha Mespi'a L'chol Chai Ratzon, so this would tell us that he's watching over the whole world, but doesn't necessarily mean that he's the one who put it there. Maybe somebody else created it, and now he comes and takes over. So it's important that we have to say these two points in tandem. So therefore the idea is, both Poseach HaSedecha Mespi'a L'chol Chai Ratzon, both of those are fundamental to the Ashrei structure, and somebody who's saying that and paying attention three times a day, so chances are he'll be aware of what he needs to be aware of. Okay, so that's as far as Ashrei is concerned. After that, the Gemara tells us the din of Kriya Shema Lamita. And there's an interesting discussion about this in the Sefer Birkas Chaim. I have here a nice Sefer on Maseches Brachos written by Rabbi Beryl Fink, the Talmud of Moshe Wolfson's, Shkiach HaTorah V'Das. that the din, the Gemara tells us, so it's interesting, he wants to suggest here that there's really two opinions here. The Gemara has on Dalet Amud Beis in the bottom, Amar Yeshua ben Levi, Afal Pishakar Adam Kriya Shema Beis HaKnesses, Mitzvah L'Kroso Al Mitaso. Now even though you already say Kriya Shema Shul, presumably at night, still, at your bedtime, there's a discussion whether it's Al Mitaso or Samachul Mitaso, next to your bed or on your bed, that I'm not going to focus on right now, but there is this Indian of saying Kriya Shema Al Mitaso. And Rav Yosi, my kara, rim to the al techto, rim to the vavchem, yal meshkatchem, v'doy musela. And the Birkas Chaim wants to suggest. Thanks. The Birkas Chaim suggests that really these are two separate opinions, and he wants to explain a number of points based on that. That basically, Rav Shua ben Levi is suggesting that Kriya Shema al Hamita is a din that is an extension of the Kriya Shema that we've been talking about till now. That the Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim is complete by having a Kriya Shema Al Hamita as well. And that's the function of Kriya Shema Al Hamita. Basically, Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim in that format as well. While Rabbi Yossi is spelling out here what he spelled out in the Yerushalmi, he's quoted in a more spelled out version. This is what Tosfos quotes, and this is what, if you look at the Gemaras and Daf Hey, you see indications of this as well. But according to Rav Yossi, the purpose of Kriya Shema Hamita is not is not really related to Mitzvah's Kriya Shema, but it's a protection from Mazikin, from whatever forces are out there. And again, your philosophical bent will impact how you translate the term Mazikin. You want to translate it as demons, are translated as dangerous forces. If you want to get translated like the Meiri does, of Deos, Chozvos of twisted Hashkafas, the way he seems to understand it. Whatever it is, whatever you're trying to protect from, so the idea of Kriya Shema Lamita is to guard against that. And again, this is something that we saw Tosfos in the first daf quoted, and which the Gemara is over here suggesting, and Rishalmi said explicitly. But perhaps Rabbi Shua ben Levi is taking a different take. So this is the take of Rabbi Yossi, that's the point of Kriya Shema Al Hamita, to be some type of a skula, or some type of a protection, I should say. While the function of Rabbi Shua ben Levi's Kriya Shema is a type of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. And that may affect a number of things. So the Beis Chaim wants to suggest that the Rambam understands this as more of a protection idea, and he has raya's for this, which I'm going to. And that the Torah is really the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch are really adopting Rabbi Shua ben Levi's idea that it's an idea of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim at that point in the stage of the day. And therefore, the following few points could possibly be eliminated. One is that the Torah does not quote the Gemara's distinction between Talmud Chacham and non Talmud Chacham. So that could be because he holds the din Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. So everyone has to do it, and it's not like we could say that a Talmud Chacham who's already involved in learning doesn't have to say other psukim in order to bring about Rachmanis. Point number two is that the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah in Perek Zayin Halacha Beis writes that kedai to say Kriya Shema Lamita, and if you're falling asleep and your mamash can't function, you're going to collapse in the middle. So make sure to say at least the first pasuk or psukei Rachmanis, and then fall asleep. So the idea that it could be the first pasuk or even other psukim, and this is then you don't find in the Torah, is perhaps again a reflection that the Rambam holds that the point is it's supposed to be a Shmira, and therefore the Shmira ideally could be Kriya Shema, but could also be other psukim as well. While according to Shua ben Levi, this wouldn't make any sense because the whole point is Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, so it has to be specifically these psukim. The third point is that there's also a dispute between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, Rambam and the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, as to the order of things. According to the Rambam, so Hamapil comes first, and then Kriya Shema. And according to the Torah and Shulchan Aruch, it's Kriya Shema and then Hamapil. And he wants to suggest that, again, if the whole point is that the Shema is supposed to be protection when you sleep, so it's got to be mamash the last thing before you go to sleep, but it can't be interrupted by this bracha. Well, perhaps according to the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, So it's just a din of kabbalah sol malchus shemayim samach l'mitaso, and to be masik between that and sleeping with berachas hamapil is not necessarily a an issue. I guess we'll go this way.
I understand how that's proves either way. Which one?
Because the Rambam is apparently saying you have to have the you want to be sleeping immediately after this protection. So to have anything going on between the Kriya Shema and your sleep is going
to. Why is it impossible to say that the Rambam holds like Rishu ben Levi, and he holds they have to have the last thing before your sleep is Kabbalah Zolam Chol Shemayim, and that the Torah and he would say that protection is just, you know, sometime before you sleep, you put this protection. Where's the?
Well, first of all, the Raya is the Rambam holds other ways are from other than Masal, but. If the whole point is you're gonna have to have you wanna have a shmirah before you as you're falling asleep. So then you could hear that if there's anything happening in between, then that's gonna interrupt the shmirah. But if the din is it's a mitzvah to be mekabel malchus shemayim before this stage of the day, so then okay, hamapil is part of that stage. That's not necessarily interrupting. But the idea before you go to sleep, you know, dama l'shchiva, before you go to sleep, you're gonna be mekabel malchus shemayim.
So it's necessarily working the stages in the day and the Rambam asleep, is that?
Well, because why if the idea is that you want to be mekabel malchus shemayim before ending your day, so why is hefsek necessarily a concern?
I don't think it's either way. You can say for sure, but you could give us rather the same way and say that the last thing you should do before you go to sleep, before you sleep, is kabbalah shel malchus shemayim. That should be the last.
Okay, I mean you could definitely reformulate it like that, but I don't know if there's any. Like that in the words. You can definitely feel free to question it, but I think that it does sound a little more mashma that if the idea is that it's going to be a protection, so the protection has to be immediate, has to be uninterrupted. While if it's the last thing you're going to do before going to sleep is this, okay, so I'm off those part of the sleep process. So then this is still the last thing you do before you go to sleep. I think we had a hand up over there first. Thank you. According to Biosi, what's the connection between Shema and Mazikim? Well, that's what it seems like from the Rambam, that in theory it could be other Pesukim as well. The Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim is a great Pesukim, the Pesukim that also do Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. The Pesukim that emphasize your relationship with Ribono Shel Olam are the best Pesukim. Mm-hmm. It could be other psukim. You think that even once you're saying psukim, these are great psukim to use. But like the Rambam saying, it could in theory be other psukim that invoke rachman.
Would Joy's question depend on how you're using the pasuk?
How you're using the pasuk? Okay.
So the pasuk is the ritzulat tichtos that you're talking about. Finding the tzahara, finding the zikim, so it's not just the dinam of the kabbalah.
Just saying, as far as Joey's question,
right.
To explain the Rabbi Yossi holds that way.
Right.
As far as the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch, does it affect that?
So I don't know. I mean, Rambam would probably say it's in the Smach Kabbalah.
So the Rambam probably holds like this.
Right.
Yes, but okay, you're saying that just helps explain the fighting the Shmira idea. Yes.
What happened if you daven Ma'ar and then go to sleep right away?
What would happen if you daven Ma'ar and then go to sleep? Saying because according to Shul Ben Levi, what? Then it should be.
At that stage, so you're going to sleep right then, so that's basically the same stage.
Oh, but Meyer itself will be a hashtag if you're saying.
But if you said that it's Mazikin, so
okay.
It
could be.
Then you wouldn't need to say that that's the Krishna Lamita according to the Torah.
I could hear it. Sounds good. Another point the thought might be related. Once every shir we have to mention the Tosfos Nach Beis Maralef, which is basically my makom for every other shir. So on that point also, so we saw again davening Ma'ariv early. So and Rashi saying that the Kriya Shema Hamita is the one that you're going to take Kriya Shema with. So Tosfos had asked, but that Kriya Shema is only with Neham Mazikin. So excuse me. So the nature of that question we discussed a little bit the first day. Sefer Birkas Chayin, he wants to suggest that the issue is kavana, that since the Gemara says that you're only supposed to say Kriya Shema Lamita because of the Nazikin, so your kavana is as a shmirah, you're not having any kavana of mitzvahs Kriya Shema. But that might be totally in whether you're taking Rishul ben Levi, or whether you're taking Rabbi Yossi. If you're saying Rabbi Yossi, so then it's a Shmira, and then maybe that's not a good Kavanah for Kriya Shema. But if you're saying Rabbi Yossi ben Levi, the whole thing is Kavanah Sol Malcha Shema, and the Kavanah is basically the same as Kriya Shema any other time, so maybe that's what Rashi's saying, and or Zeru already felt that Rashi holds like Rabbi Yossi ben Levi as far as Mitzgul Lutzvilah, as we discussed last time. Right, that Tosfos asked how come Rashi is not concerned about Mitzgul Lutzvilah by allowing you to say Kriya Shema late at night after Shmona Esrei. So the Zeru suggests maybe Rashi holds like Rabbi Yossi ben Levi. That was part of our last discussion. So too here, maybe he's holding like Rabbi Shulman Levi. Excuse me. As far as what Kriya Shema Lamita is concerned, and therefore the Kavanah for Kriya Shema Lamita is not too different from the Kavanah for Kriya Shema at any other time. Okay, one other point about Kriya Shema Lamita. So the Hagos Hashri in the beginning, in the first siman, in the first parak here, so he points out, you know, there was some discussion, again, this relates back to that first discussion. So, in the context, the Rush brings the discussion in the context of someone who's saying Kriya Shema at night, separately from Ma'ariv, so the question of whether there's a Berachas HaMitzvah on that Kriya Shema. So in Kriya Shema HaMita, so the Gaon HaShri quotes, that there's no Bracha because, he's assuming, like this word, that the idea is that it's a shmirah from Azikin, and therefore it's basically to prevent sakana. And there's no bracha on something that is to prevent sakana. It's just an interesting thing to be aware of. The Tosfos like this in Chulin also, in Kalabasar, in the discussion about Mayim Achronim, that the Tosfos there explains why there's no bracha on Mayim Achronim, because the Gemara says it was instituted in order to prevent people from blinding themselves because they had the salt that was blinding and it was on their hands. And so the Gemara says you should wash your hands before benching so you shouldn't get into danger. So there Tosfos says that there's no bracha on this because it's to prevent from danger. So this is the yesod that the Achronim discuss whether or not this is true. If you're interested, I can give you a list of many svarim that you don't have access to right now. That'll have a discussion about this. One point some want to suggest that this is why there's no bracha on the mitzvah of eating an Erev Yom Kippur. That an Erev Yom Kippur, so as we know, there is a din, seems like it's a din in the HaTorah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And there's a discussion why it is. Is it a type of Sudas Yatif, or is it a type of preparation for the fast in some sense or another, which is a much longer discussion. But some Achronim want to suggest that maybe it's a type of preparation for the fast, that we want to make sure you don't die, basically. And so therefore, basically just trying to make sure that you get through the fast okay. So the institution is to prevent the sakana, so there's no bracha on such an institution. In general, it's a discussion, is this the case, whether or not, like some Rishonim are assuming, that if you have a din, and in the end of the day it's a din, but it was put there because of avoiding sakana, so is there a bracha in such a circumstance? And that's what you have over here, this comment that Kriya Shema Lamita doesn't have a bracha. Okay, on Heyman Aleph, again, there are a lot of agadic points, which I recommend that you look at on your own. I just want to mention a few artists, both historical and halachic, that come up from various gemaras here. Just one point, the Rav in the Urta Yishirim points out, and the Balatanya has much about this in his Kuntres Talmud Torah that's printed in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, but the Rav makes reference to these Rashis on the Hey Amad Aleph. So if you look at the third line, so Zem Mikra and Zu Mishnah, and that phrase in the Gemara, so Zem Mikra, Rashi says, Chomish Shemitzvah Likros BaTorah. And Zu Mishnah, Sheyisasku BaMishnah. And it could be suggested, as the Rav points out, and this is again the theme you find in other Svarim, that this is hinting at a major difference in the way Torah Shebal Peh and Torah Shebichsav are structured. That if you take Chumash versus Gemara, for example, to represent the Torah Shebal Peh and Torah Shebichsav, so the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, when it comes to Chumash, can be fulfilled by reading the words without understanding them. And again, this is something that you find in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav's writings, that if you read the words of Torah without understanding them, so that could be a key in Talmud Torah. As we see in Rashi, Zem Mikra Chumash and Mitzvah Likros BaTorah. And Torah Shebal Peh is not that way. Torah Shebal Peh, so The ikar is the themes. The ikar is not the words. The words were just a way of keeping track of the Torah Shebal Peh that was going to be forgotten. Right? Hence the name. Right? Torah Shebal Peh indicates that the writing down is certainly not the ikar. So somebody who reads through Masechus Brachos and doesn't understand what he's reading, so is not Mekayem Mitzvah Talmud Torah. And Pashto, somebody who goes through all the themes of Brachos without actually seeing the words somehow, is also Yotzei. So there's this difference as far as fulfilling the Mitzvah of Talmud Torah between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. Is it the focus on the words or the focus on the themes? We're certainly going to recommend both, but the Ikar Mitzvah Talmud Torah in Chumash is the words, and hopefully you understand as well, while in Torah Shebal Peh the words are much less the focus, and it could be that these Rashis are bringing this to mind.
Sorry?
You can only read Ashrei, like Ashrei with the Kavan, in order to get to the school.
Just to read.
Right, exactly.
Does this include Mishnah or just Gemara? Mishnah is like Halacha Pesukos.
No, Pashas, we're talking about Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh as a whole, the words are not really relevant. The words are. Rav Shechter often laments people who will spend too much emphasis making Divrei Torah on the words in Shas, because the words, you don't necessarily even know, you know, how significant the words per se are, that it's the themes in the Shas that are important. And Torah Shebichtav is different. It gives much more room to darshan the words themselves. Okay, I mentioned the historical point. So, this Gemara on Hey Amid Aleph, which is an extension of this Kriyash Malamita Gemara, is a major battleground historically between the Bali Musar and those who are opposed to Bali Musar, those who are opposed to the Musar approach, which again Bizman Hazeh is not such a raging machlokas anymore. Things have kind of merged, but in the 1800s this was a major blazing fight, and there were yeshivas that were set up with the focus of studying Musar, and there were many who were very opposed. And within the Brisker tradition, so in the time of Reb Chaim, so you have more of a emphasis on this anti-Brisker focus, on this anti-Musar focus, while other schools of thought differed. And if I'm not mistaken, the following point is related somewhere in the work Halachic Man of the Ravs, this following story. I think it's in there somewhere. That Reb Chaim was approached by one of the advocates of the Musar school. I think it may have been Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser, the author of the Pre Yitzchak. I'm not 100% sure about that. But Reb Chaim was approached and he was asked that this Gemara seems to be a good commercial for the Musar approach. Because the Gemara says that one should always fight his Yetzer Tov against his Yetzer Hara, right? The old Yagers are the Yetzer Tov al Yetzer Hara. And in Nitzchu Mutav, if you win, great, and if lav, yas b'tayrus. And then we should do what you should be holding in Torah. Shneamar, imu levavchem, fine. In Nitzchu Mutav, if that works great, if not, in lav, yikra kriyashma. So that's a good idea, read kriyashma instead. Shneamar, mashkavchem, in Nitzchu Mutav, in lav, yizkar lo yom hamisa. And if not, you should remember the day of death, shemar v'dom usela, and that will set things straight. So, this remembering the day of death seems to be more kind of like a Navardic type approach. You may recall that there are different schools of thought within Musar, and the Bud school was the more uplifting, positive, wonderful aspects of humanity type approach to Musar, and Navardic was more of the negative, we're all going to die and we all stink type approach to Musar. And this seems to be supporting that, was the approach that the Gemara says, look, the best recipe against Chet is Yasku Yom HaMisa, is remember the day of death. I think that in Navarrete there were guys who would go to cemeteries, do all kinds of things to bring about that imagery, that which the Gemara cites as the ultimate ingredient in this fight against the Yetzer Hara. So Reb Chaim's response was, no, that doesn't make sense at all, because let's use the comparison to physical health. So you'll tell somebody it's kedai to eat well and to exercise and you'll stay healthy. And then if you get sick, so you need to have medicine. And if you get really sick, then you need to have surgery. So the surgery is the ultimate. But does that mean that we're going to recommend for all the healthy people in the street that they should go have surgery? I'm paraphrasing. This is basically the gist. That just because this was the ultimate in how you handle things, so that's the ultimate for people who are really sick. But people who aren't sick or people who are healthy, don't. It would be bad for them to run to that. So too, the Gemara is telling you that the first approach is Talmud Torah. And if that's not working, then you create Kriyat Shema. And if that doesn't work, then remember Yom HaMisa. So Baruch Hashem, our guys are healthy spiritually, and they're involved in Talmud Torah, and that's what they should be doing. And it's only the people who really need it, that's the people who go to this last stage. So this was a dispute between Reb Chaim and the Balei Musar, which again I think is in the Halachic Mandate, but it's brought down in other books as well. And it centers around this, it centers around this Gemara. They, I mentioned earlier that there's a Sefer, Chiddushei Ben Yehonasan, that Yehonasan Eibshitz's manuscripts on Brachos were published a number of years ago. So there he suggests that this Gemara is referring to three different aspects of what makes a person sin. That in general, why do people sin? So he says there's three categories of reasons why they do. First reason is because they don't know any better, because they don't know the information that they would need to know. They don't know what's going on, so this lack of knowledge leads them down the wrong path. And the second reason is not necessarily a function of lack of knowledge, but it's a function of gaiva, that somebody thinks he's above things, he thinks that he's greater than that, so he has the greater than whatever restriction or whatever it is, or he's trying to impress other people, whatever it is. Gaiva and kavod is a second category of motivation to push people into sin. And the third category, it doesn't matter how much you know, and it's not a function of gaiva, but there's just the aspect of taiva. Taiva and chemdus, this desire to do what you want. So that's the third category which draws people into sin. So, Jonas Neitz suggested that these three strategies are meant to parallel these three issues. That, first of all, maybe you don't know enough. So if you don't know enough, so Talmud Torah is the best solution. So increasing your learning of Torah will take care of a certain percentage of the averus. But then there's still the aspect of gaiva, and that sometimes brings about averus. So if you focus on the relationship between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam and how that's really key and that everyone else doesn't really matter, so that will minimize your, first of all, it'll quiet down your gaiva, clap in the Ribbono Shel Olam, but it'll also minimize your concern about what anyone else thinks. So therefore, the approach to dealing with gaiva is Kriyat Shema. But then at the end of the day, there's still going to be Taiva and Chemda, which could overcome anything else. So therefore, the only way to deal with that is remember, Yom HaMisa, remember in the end of the day is you're going to have to give an accounting, and life is not all about this moment, and that will hopefully deal with that. Okay, so that's how, excuse me, that's how Ravina Sinai just wanted to comment in interpreting that Gemara. Anyway, there is another halachic discussion that circles around this Gemara, which impacts on a sugya which I do Be'ez Hashem hope to get to, so I'm not going to spend that much time on it, but just to say a little bit about it. So the pasuk that they're quoting for Yaslik B'Torah is Imru B'Levavchem, say in your hearts. So it's actually a big discussion whether or not that's a key in Talmud Torah in the Tshuvas Ma'asham. So he writes, you see here a raya that Talmud Torah is also a good machshav. It doesn't have to be spoken out loud, but just thinking about Imru B'Levavchem, saying in your hearts, sounds like that's talking about Kriyat Shema that's just being thought. That's not Kriyat Shema, that's Talmud Torah that's just being thought. So therefore you can be Yotzei Talmud Torah to the thought. Rishis Fengel later on in the end of the parak has a similar horror in his Tziyunim LaTorah. So this is actually a discussion L'Halach, L'Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim and Siman Yom Zayin and Sif Gimel write that somebody who's Maharer B'Divrei Torah doesn't have to make a bracha. And this is a well-known dispute between the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra. And he also makes a distinction, which we'll discuss, that you don't have to make a bracha if you're Maharer Divrei Torah, but if you write Divrei Torah, so you do have to make a bracha. So there's two points to figure out here. One, as we see, the Gra disagrees in the first assumption, the whole thing, is any distinction between thinking and speaking. And if you say there is distinction, but to say that writing is better than thinking, so that's another point to discuss. So the Levush explains that when it comes to hear her, the Shulchan Aruch says there's no bracha because you don't make a bracha on a machshava. You don't make a bracha on something that takes place just in thought. This is similar to a yisod that we have from the Beis Yosef. You know that the Beis Yosef has the yisod in Hilchos Chametz HaMatzah that is often quoted in other contexts. that when it comes to beer chametz, so we make the bracha on the beer and not on the bittel, because bittel can be done belayv, and you don't make a bracha on something belayv. So Lavush is saying a similar point. That's what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. You don't make a bracha on machshava. Then it come out that it would be the Beis Yosef l'shitaso. But ksiva is a maisa. Ksiva is an action. So therefore, you are going to make a bracha on. In any case, the Vilna Gaon disagrees on the first point of the machaber. That the implication apparently being that you're not yoked to come the Torah of Machshava, which is not necessarily the only way to interpret what Machab is saying, but that that spin on it, so the Vilna Gaon disagrees. He says that, you know, the pasuk that we often cite is the Makar for the Chiyah Talmud Torah, the pasuk in Yoshua, right? Yigisa b'yom v'layla, so the Yigisa, that's talking about thinking. That's not talking about, the word means to ponder, right? To meditate on, so meditate as a reference to thinking. So that's, you see there, that's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Hi.
Isn't it
basically
over there that if you the Beis Yosef whole thing over there, that if you can do the thing through Machshava, then you don't make a bracha on it, even if you do it with a maisa. I think, like, that's what they say. He holds, no, I can't remember the one time.
I just want to say, if that was the word here, then you shouldn't be open. Unless, so therefore you have to say that the Shulchan Aruch would hold that it's that you're not Yosef to Machshav at all. Right. Which is some discussion. Shagas Aryeh in Simon Chavdal, it has a major essay on the obligation of Berach Shatar, and maybe we'll get this hopefully around Dafir Aleph a little more next week. But he wants to prove, based on the Rambam, that the obligation of Birchas HaTorah is only on somebody who's learning mid bepeh, somebody who's learning orally, out loud. And even if you're Mekayim Mitzvah Talmud Torah by thinking, you still don't make a bracha. Hi.
Just questions. First, we assume, according to the Shulchan Aruch, that opening a sefer and learning from it is also considered yirhak.
Pashas, yeah.
And second is. Is
Dibor
considered
a Meister? So Dibor, you have to say it's a Meister, because that's what he's talking about. You have to say it's enough of a Meister. But the question is, thinking about it, vis-a-vis Dibor. So the Aruch HaShulchan suggests that the Iker Mitzvah of Talmud Torah is bepet, is orally, is verbally. And even though there is a Mitzvah in Machshav, he's not saying there's no Mitzvah, but this is maybe different from what you're suggesting. But that the takana of the bracha is only on the Iker Mitzvah. So when it comes to ksiva, it says that's great, because ksiva is even more the Iker Mitzvah Talmud Torah, because ksiva is what allows Torah to get remembered and be eternalized, so that's gevaldik. But just machshava, so even though there's a kiyum mitzvah, that's not the Iker Mitzvah, so there's no bracha on that. There is also a discussion. Yeah?
Is the giver of the Mahari of Dutch Bush, you just look sugar machine and understand would that be a.
So to combine the 2 points. Right, so Pashas, it's not related. That if you're thinking, once we assume that Talmud Torah of Torah Shabbat Peh, of Torah Shabbat Chsav is just the words. So again, how are you relating to words? Are you saying them out loud, or are you thinking it? Like, I don't know if these two concerns overlap. The question is, well, first determine whether the mitzvah is the words or the themes. And then, the question is it enough just to be thinking about the words, or do you have to say them outside?
Rashi,
Likros Patara could mean reading silently. So if I'm just looking at a chumash, so that Pashat would be, if you're seeing the words, you don't know what they mean. Right? You open up a chumash, you look gracious, barley, and you don't know what that means. So, to put the two together, that if you're saying that you're kind of talking about understanding it, but then you're now thinking these words, so if you're assuming that here is Yosef,
you're not sure. That's called here, not Kriya.
Right. Well, here and Kriya, that could be called Kriya, maybe. I mean, as far as the purposes of this Rashi, it could be called Kriya. It's not called Kriya for Kriya Satara.
But let's take this question of Kriya Satara, because it opens the Gemara, and we'll have on it just. Scans the page.
That's called here.
That's called here.
Yeah.
Okay. So going to the more, going to the way you understand.
I mean, it seems from all these discussions, because they all contrast te and here, and they're not talking about the presence or absence of books. Mm-hmm. So implications. That's all here.
And according to Gura's interpretation of Shulchan Aruch, that if Shulchan Aruch was only the Birkas Torah on here because he's not keeping the Torah at all, how would that, and then the Shulchan passes much of the Maharaj of the Torah, it must have been basic.
No, it's very hard to say. You'd have to assume that the Isser comes from something else, not from a key image with Talmud Torah, but it's not that it's a design for the Torah for you to be thinking about it. Not necessarily it's a key image with Talmud Torah. So we don't necessarily know that that's the Isser. The Isser is not from the Kayan.
No,
but
you're not in the Kayan Mitzvah, you're not being someone who's Torah, you're doing not considered any kind of Torah.
But if you somehow, maybe there's an Isser to be Maharaj of the Torah, Makom, that's when the makom is not clean, doesn't necessarily mean that you're making a mitzvah by doing that. Perhaps. In any case, so as part of this last point, so this contrast between Ksiva and Hirhur. So, in general, it is a discussion. It's a famous discussion in several tshuvas in the Tshuvas of Akiva Eger. It's in Chav Ches through Lamed Beis, and it's a big discussion in many others. For what is the status of Ksiva in general? That it could be that Ksiva has a status like Dibur. And the original springboard for that discussion with Shuvah Subikiv Eger is Sphira Sa'omer. Somebody writes down the date of Sphira during Sphira that he fulfilled the mitzvah of Sphira there. And that's a major, major discussion, which we're not going to get into all the details now, but that's a major point, which could affect this question also, that maybe that could explain why Ksiva is different than Hirhur, because Ksiva could basically have a din like speaking. There are others who suggest, and it says like this in the Tshuvas Shev Yaakov, but I think I've seen this in other Sfarim as well, that the Iker Mitzvah's Talmud Torah is from Vishinanta Muvanecha. It's from teaching your children. And that connotes that the main Mitzvah of Talmud Torah is teaching it to other people. So therefore, the Iker fulfillment of Talmud Torah is a type that could communicate the Torah to somebody else, which doesn't necessarily mean they have to be there, but the idea that somebody else could receive the Torah that you're teaching, that you're learning, that's apparently a tenai in Talmud Torah. So therefore, speaking or writing has that, but thinking doesn't, and that's Pshat in the Shulchan Aruch, that, and again, maybe not to say that there's no mitzvah in thinking, but that the Iker mitzvah Talmud Torah, which we focus on as far as making a Berachas HaMitzvah on, is that which is capable of communicating it to others, and it's only speaking or writing that has that capability and not just thinking. I think it's possible, I may have heard this name of the Rav at some point, but that's another explanation that some Sfarim have. The Shar Mitzvah B'Halacha quotes a long discussion about this and quotes many of these points. So he wants to suggest himself that he doesn't think this is a good raya anyway. This Gemara about Imu B'Vavchem, so that indicates that Talmud Torah should believe in Talmud Torah. He doesn't think that's what the pasuk means. If the pasuk means, especially in the context of what we're talking about, it's saying talk in such a way that it's going to have an impact on your heart. That basically talk to your heart. Imru b'levavchem, talk, learn in such a way that your heart's going to get the message. This is where we're talking about using Talmud Torah as a fight against the Yetzirah. So that's the whole point here. So that's what the message is. Not that just thinking the Divrei Torah is enough of a key in Talmud Torah, but that in this context, the Talmud Torah should be spoken in such a way that the heart receives the message. And that's the focus, not that it's only spoken in the heart. Just one cute idea that I've also pointed out, Bala Musar pointed out on this Gemara. So this Gemara going further. So, excuse me. So this Gemara going further talks about what somebody should do if he finds things aren't going well, and if he finds that he has yisurin, so he should look through his meisim and he should see what's going wrong, and he should look through his actions and see if there's anything he could correct. And the Gemara says if he doesn't find anything, so yid leb bittul Torah, so then he should blame it on bittul Torah. So the Bala Musar asks, well, what are you talking about? Bittul Torah is not an aveirah. So it's like, look, if you don't find any aveiros, then use Bittul Torah. So the Bala Musar explained that the idea is that Ein Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yatatov Lo Yachtov, that there is nobody in this world who, if they're really accurately inventorying their actions, are going to find there's nothing wrong. So if you can look at everything you've done and you can't find anything wrong, there's only one explanation for that. You don't know enough. If you knew enough Torah, you'd realize what it was you were doing wrong. So basically what the Gemara is saying, that if you can really look through all your actions and not find anything wrong, then you have a Bittul Torah. That's the consequence of Bittul Torah. That it must be that you're not the only possible explanation that somebody could go through all his meisim and not find anything wrong, because that's the consequence of Bittul Torah, and therefore that's something to be dealt with. Okay, so if you could turn out the hay in the days, there's a couple points here, maybe we'll just talk about one or two today and we'll do the rest for tomorrow. And again, for tomorrow, if you go through Vav, and Vav and the Beis, and basically if you go for tomorrow, just go through the Gemaras. But, so the couple, one din that's a major topic of discussion in the bottom of Hayim and Beis is that the Gemara quotes this din here that that there shouldn't be anything in between you when you're davening. So that's a major question. So in general, all very often we're davening certainly in shuls or in schools, so there are furniture items between us and the wall. So is that an issue? So Tosaf picks up on this point. Tosaf says, well, that something milso dekvia, something that's there all the time, like the arun and the teva, those things that are part of the furniture in the shul that are there always, so that's not a hefzik, that's okay. But a mita, but a bed, so it seems like that's not kavua, that's something that you shouldn't have in the way. And the Beis Yosef and the other poskim suggest that even the bed might be okay, b'zman hazeh, that there's a difference between the bed in the time of Tosfos and the bed now, that we see in Hilchos Aveilos in another context, that a bed wasn't necessarily a bed that's set in place, but it's something also used for sitting and moved around. So it could be that at the time of the Rishonim that would be a problem, but nowadays our beds are stuck in place, and that's okay. But this is a discussion in general about other types of movable items being in front of you, being between you and the wall. So there actually is a big discussion in the Magen Avraham and in the Taz, and the Aruch HaShulchan talks about this, about the very widespread minhag to daven in front of a shtender. So is that an issue or not? So again, it's hard to imagine that it is, looking at the minhag olam, certainly many big Talmidei Chachamim are davening in front of shtenders all the times. So one approach to this is that anything that's mitzarech hatfila is fine. And that seems to be a popular approach. The Magen Avraham, if you look at the Magen Avraham, you see he's not incredibly excited about that approach. But he's trying very hard to find other things to explain it, that maybe it's too small. In general, there is a discussion of what the real reason for this din is. That, is it a function of chatzitza, so to speak, the way the Torah says, that since tefillah is like a korban, so we don't have any chatzitza between you and the wall? Or do we assume that it's basically an issue of distraction? That the din that we see here also, that you should be davening against the wall, is so there shouldn't be anything attracting your attention. So if there's anything else attracting your attention, that's a problem. And that's a discussion here. So you can have a shtender, mitzorech hatfilah, so is that an issue or not? And again, if you look in the Taz, he seems to be okay with that. If you look in the Aruch HaShulchan, he basically concludes after a little bit of a discussion here with Kol Tarech HaTfilah Basic Nessus Lohevi Chatzitza, that anything that's there for the purposes of Tfilah is not going to get in the way, is not going to be an interruption. And others throw in suggestions that also if you close your eyes, if you make sure that there isn't any distraction in front of you, so you'll make everyone happy that way. But that's all discussion based on this Gemara here.
Well, I guess you're probably going to notice this thing also, but bring up the idea of closing your eyes. Would that have an effect on, so for example, you're not allowed to walk a step in front of somebody when they're diving. So mm-hmm. If the person has their eyes closed, if the reason is because of kavona, so it shouldn't be an issue with her.
If that's the issue. Although assuming that they don't sense you there with their eyes closed, which is also a question. But the reason for not walking who are davening is not necessarily a kavona issue. It could be a shchein issue. Right. That's a question. But in any case, there's a little bit more to talk about on this daf. Maybe we'll get to it tomorrow. One topic that comes up is that the Gemara talks about Rabbi Yochanan, who had a terrible yisurin, and he lost 10 sons. And the Gemara talks about him carrying around the bone of one of the sons. That's the Pala Dikazah. How are you going to carry around the bone? Isn't that going to be Matame? So if you look in Rashi, so Rashi, it sounds like it was Pachos Mikasah. It was less than a shear of that which is Matame. And the Aruch, you see on the side, the Aruch says it was actually a tooth. and the tooth says it's not metame. So the question is, does that help if it's not metame? What about kvuru? Doesn't he have a chiyuv to? Doesn't he have a chiyuv to bury it? So the Shita Mekubetzes here says that this tooth was removed while he was still alive. Tooth fell out while he was still alive, and he was carrying around after that. And it seems like the point that he's addressing is that even though it's not going to be metame, but what about kvuru? So if it was taken from a living body, maybe that's the point that allows him to get out of kvuru. In general, it's a discussion. Now the Mishnah has a nice little discussion about what's the connection between tumah and kvura. Do we assume that only things that are metame, only a body that's metame, has it been kvura? And if something that's less than the sheer tumah, or a part of a body that's less than the sheer tumah, it's not going to have the chiyuv kvura either? Or do we say that the chiyuv kvura has nothing to do with tumah, and therefore even something that's not metame, so also is chayv kvura? So it could be that's what the Shita Mekubetzes is addressing, by emphasizing that the tooth was taken while he was still alive, to indicate that's why he doesn't need kvura. Or if you don't say like that, as the Nehal Mishpah points out, you could say that since the tooth is something that could be taken out while you're still alive, in other words, it's not going to render the body deficient in any significant way, because living people walk around without them all the time. So therefore, it's not something that the chiyuv kvura applies to. So that's another little bit of a lumdish discussion that comes out at this point, and what is the emphasis in the Rishonim in trying to establish what exactly it was that Rabbi Yochanan was carrying around. Okay, so Bez Hashem tomorrow, we'll maybe make another point too about Hayim Beis, but again, be holding in Vav and Zion, and we'll see how far we can get like this before getting some